Good morning. It's good to see everybody here today. I don't know if you knew that I was going to be the featured speaker since I have no tie on. I think that's a requirement, isn't it? Or at least a suit. So it's good to see everybody here today. It's good to see the Caseys back from beautiful sunny California. I'm sure they came back for this, right? There's not a lot of sledding out there. And Jill came up from Florida. And we were discussing before services started that there are sounds that you hear up here that you don't hear in Florida or in Southern California. You don't hear, as people walk in the door, the sound. It's unique. It's unique to areas where you get this sort of snow. But it's really good to see everybody here. Mark, I appreciated the songs and I appreciated the opening remarks because that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit, was New Year's resolution. We took a poll in this morning's class, and out of 15 people, one person's making resolutions.
I think that's a new thing, though.
I'm sorry? That's a new thing. You're going against the trend.
Yes.
Exactly. The trend seems to be not to have resolutions, but we should. We should have resolutions. Whether it's at the beginning of the year or during the year, we should have resolutions. Let me turn it on. Of course, what's a presentation of mine without Calvin and Hobbes? And you know, Calvin has this unique view of life, which isn't that unique. It's actually quite common, and I think that's part of the author's message. He says, Hobbes says, "How are you doing on your New Year's resolution?" And Calvin says, "I didn't make any." See, in order to improve oneself, one must have some idea of what good that implies certain values. But as we all know, values are relative. Every system of belief is equally valid, and we need to tolerate diversity. Virtue isn't better than vice. It's just different. And Hobbes says, "I don't know if I can tolerate that much tolerance." And he says, "I refuse to be victimized by notions of virtuous behavior." I learn from Calvin. I take him at his word. And so I resolve in 2018 to eat healthy. Now, when we were traveling, there are ways of looking at this that may or perhaps be different than you consider. For example, if you lick the icing off of a cupcake, it becomes a muffin. And muffins are healthy. So I resolved to eat healthy this year. It's just the definition of healthy. But seriously though, if we think about the song that we ended before I got up here, why do we do these things? Why do we resolve to go out in the world and make life better for other people? And what we're going to talk about today is a Hebrew word, shalom. It's often interpreted, translated as peace. But Hebrew is one of these, I think it's referred to as a phenomenological language. Greek is very specific. English is very specific. When it used to be, when I say something is good, you generally tend to say, "Yes, we understand what you're talking about." When I say peace, you get this picture in your mind of what peace is. And that's where the disconnect comes with us in shalom. But this is why we do it. Because when we think of it, we think of peace from violence. We think from, you know, peace and tranquility. The kids are quiet. We have shalom in the house. But it's more than that. It means friendship. It's this relationship that I have with you. It's this connectiveness that we have where we relate as friends. It means peace with God. It means that I have this relationship with God. And so if I say to Mickey, "Mickey, have shalom," I may mean that it's noisy in his house and I hope the kids will quieten down. But I may also mean, "May you be at peace with God." May you have this relationship with God. This is the word that David uses when he did not have the relationship. He says in Psalm 38, O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor discipline me in your wrath, for your arrows have sunk into me and your hands have come down on me. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your indignation. There is no health in my bones. There is no shalom. I'm missing that relationship with you, and I feel that within me. I do not have shalom because I have disappointed you, because I've angered you, because I've done against your word, because of my sin. For my iniquities have gone over my head like a heavy burden. They are too heavy for me. That is the opposite of shalom, this heaviness that he feels. It also talks about completeness, completeness in number. Everyone is here today. We have shalom in the organization, in the group that we have. Hopefully when you look at something like that, you say we have shalom, that everything is complete. It's also safety and soundness, it's welfare. In Genesis 29, when Jacob goes and he's been sent off to find a wife, he comes to the land of the people of the east, and as he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it, for out of that well the flocks were watered. And the stone on the mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the mouth of the well, and the water would water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. And so he says to the shepherds, my brothers, where do you come from? And they said, we're from Haran. And he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said, is it shalom with him? Is he well? Is he doing okay? And they said, it is shalom. Laban is doing well. He has peace in the world. His family is together. And by the way, look, here's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. So, you know, the kids are working. The sheep are out here. Life is good. Things are shalom. Psalm 35, David writing about the people who are oppressing him, talks about the people who are not oppressing him. And he says, let those who delight in my righteousness shout for joy and be glad and say evermore, great is the Lord who delights in the shalom of his servant. Then my tongue shall tell of your righteousness and of your praise all day long. In Psalm 72, give king your justice, O God, and your righteousness to the royal son. Now he talks about the shalom of the people. He says, may you judge your people with righteousness, your poor with justice. Let the mountains bear shalom for the people and the hills in righteousness. May you defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the children of the needy, and crush the oppressor. He's saying, God, give the king wisdom to give shalom to your people. Help me lead them in a way that they will find completeness. They will find welfare. They will find prosperity. That's my job. Psalm 122, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. So now he's talking about, again, God's people and the shalom for them. Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together, in which the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, was decreed for Israel to give thanks in the name of the Lord. Their thrones for judgment were set, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the shalom of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you. Shalom be within your walls and security within your towers. For my brothers and companions' sake, I will say, shalom be with you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. This could be a resolution for us. That we look at his church and we say, may the church have shalom. Because that's what David is saying here. He's talking about the community of God. And so we could look for shalom then. And one final one before we dive into it. This one may sound familiar to you. Micah chapter 5. But you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah, who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who's to be the ruler in Israel, who's coming forth as of old from Ancient of Days. Where have you heard this before? This is the response of the people, of the priests, when Herod said, where is the Savior to be born? And they said, he's to be born in Bethlehem of Judea. The Savior will come from there. And therefore he will give them up until the time when she who is in labor is given birth, and the rest of his brothers shall return to the people of Israel. And he shall stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall dwell secure. For he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be their shalom. We translate it as peace, and we get this vision of no violence, but it's more complete than that. I think when you look at Psalms, when you look at David, which one jumps out in your mind that you'd say, oh, that's a description of shalom. That's a description of peace. That's a description of wellness, of security. I think it's Psalms 23. Although nowhere in here does it use the word shalom, still, when you think about this, why do people the world over, Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, all know this and all hold this up as great literature? Why do they hold it up as something which gives comfort? Why do they hold it up and say, look, that's the way life should be? It's because encapsulated in Psalms 23 is a description of shalom. It is a description of a person who is brought to that state of shalom. Why don't you read with me? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What more could you ask for? What more could anyone want than what's described here? If we look at it, you can break it down into three areas. The first one is his relationship with the Lord and what God does for him, what the Lord does for him. The second one talks about the relationship of his shepherd and the outside world, the protection that's brought. And finally, there's a looking forward towards the future. If I walk with this shepherd, where will I end up? For today, I think we could spend all the time until we have our New Year's Eve party tonight talking about all three sections. Was that amen as in so be it, let's do it? time well spent. You could. But it's and I would encourage you, we will look at the first section today. I would encourage you to go back and look at the other two sections. And don't look at it from Western eyes. Look at it as David would have seen it. Look at it as the people who would have heard the psalm would have talked about. So the first three verses. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Shepherd is, when we talk about shepherd, we talk about someone who tends sheep. But the word itself is actually composed of three Hebrew letters. There's He, Ayin, and Resh. And the letters actually infer meanings to them. The first one is talking about one who beholds. Sometimes it has an indication of divinity, but it's one who beholds. The second letter is talking about seeing. So this is one, it's a description of one who sees and beholds. And the last one is along the same lines, talking about watching over something. So this is a person who sees and watches. In a lot of the rabbinic literature, shepherds are not referred to in a positive manner. And it's not clear why. Because the shepherd, there were indications of rulers at that time in Babylon, in Assyria, rulers, kings who said, "I am the shepherd of my people." So this is not an uncommon theme for someone who is watching out for a group of people to say, "I am a shepherd." But it's a verb. When used in "the Lord is my shepherd," it's a verb. So from that standpoint, it's saying the Lord is shepherding me. Ananias is shepherding me. Yahweh is shepherding me. The creator of the universe is shepherding me. When we talk about it, when we've translated it as "the Lord is my shepherd," it seems a little passive. But when I talk about "he is shepherding me," it's an active voice. He is doing this for me. As that shepherd, as the one who is actively doing this, he knows my needs. What's the other thing about this? What's implied when I say "he is my shepherd"? What does it say about me? What? I'm a sheep. So when I say Adonai is shepherding me, I'm a sheep. And so he knows what the sheep needs. And what the psalmist is saying, "I shall not want, I lack nothing." The shepherd is a good shepherd. The shepherd knows me, he knows what I need, and he describes that in the following phrases. When he talks about "he makes me lie down in green pasture," you don't make sheep do anything. When you start reading about sheep, they say, you can't make a sheep do anything. You can take them to places and they will lie down when they are feeling rested, when they are feeling calm, when there's no dog barking in the distance. So when we say "he makes me lie down in green pastures," I have reached a state of restfulness that I can lie down in the grass. What do you picture when you think of green pastures? Actually, when you look at it, the word, there is no word "green" there in the Hebrew part of it. The word is "grassy." In the English, we've translated it as "green." But they shepherded their flocks not in the green fields of inner Israel. That was reserved for, the really good soil there was for growing crops. And you don't take the sheep in to eat up all your crops. You take them to the Negev. And this is a picture of the Negev. These are shepherds out with their sheep. How much green do you see there? There's not a lot of green. But if you look closely, there's a clump of grass here, there's a clump of grass here, there's one there, and there's one there. My shepherd takes me into the field where he can feed me. It's not enough. He doesn't take me to a field where I will gorge myself, but he gives me enough. And Vanderland talks about this, and he said, one of his compatriots, one of his Arab Middle Eastern compatriots said, you Westerners have it all wrong. You deal with tomorrow's problems in today's pasture. You expect to have all this green there. You expect to have this full pasture. But can you handle what life will throw at you in the next 10 minutes? You don't know. But you have a mouthful right now. And you're with the shepherd. What more do you want? Why does it have to be on you to go out and find that lush green field which has every amount of food that anybody would ever want for now and forever, when you have a shepherd who will take you and make sure you have what you need for today? So he pastures me in grass, and I rest because I have enough for today, and I know he will provide for me for tomorrow. In the next line, when it talks about "in still waters," there's two ways to look at this. Beside the still waters, he leads me. Again, you have this concept not of driving. You're not being driven. You're being led. And what one of the interpretations of this, one view of this, is that shepherds, sheep hate moving water. They will not go to the water and drink. One of the guys who was riding, who had been a shepherd as a young man, said, "I would take the sheep to the river, and one might drink, but all the others stood there and said, 'We're not going near it. There's too much water there.'" Sometimes when that's the case, what the shepherd will do is to dig a ditch. He'll dig a ditch out, and then the calm water will flow into that ditch. The other part of it is when you look at the word beside, sometimes it's translated, it can be translated and refer to beside, but it can also refer to still. I'm sorry, as through. So through the still water, he carries me. It's interesting. Now, how would that happen? If you can't drive a sheep, what do you have to do to get them to go through the water? And one of the characteristics of sheep is they have with their shepherd this relationship. When the shepherd calls, the sheep follow. There's a story of I think in the 1930s, when one of the times when they were having the unrest in Palestine and the British rounded up all the Palestinians, they took the sheep away from them, put them in a pen, and they said, "When you guys settle down and you come to your senses, you can come get your sheep. You have to pay us, of course, to get your sheep out. But you have to come get your sheep." And this young boy, this orphan boy who had about 8 or 10 sheep, somehow rounded up the money to redeem his sheep out of the sheepfold, went to the British officer and he said, "I have 8 or 10 sheep in here." And the guy laughed at him. And he said, "Look, there's 1,000 sheep out there. How are you going to find your 10 sheep? You can do it. Go ahead." The boy pulled out his little pipe, his little whistle, and he played his tune. And 10 sheep separated themselves out of the hundreds or thousands that were there and came to him. That's what you do as a shepherd. You call. You know, Jesus said in John 10, "I am the good shepherd. The sheep know my voice." So to go through the water, well, in Turkey, they have a contest. Once a year, they have this contest out on the water, and it's to see who's the best shepherd. Who can get their sheep to cross through and go from this side of the river, go from this side of the river to that side of the river. And when you start looking at what's going on, every time, the shepherd is the one out in the water first. The shepherd goes into the water and he turns and he calls his sheep. Now, it's, the other interesting thing is you look at these sheep, they've dressed them up. So this is the lead sheep for this guy. But look at him. He's there, he's called the sheep, his lead sheep, and the sheep comes toward him. And the whole flock follows behind. This is one way when you look, and he leads me through the still waters. The shepherd has gone out into the water. He's taken me from one pasture to the next. He calls, and I hear his call, and I trust him. Why do I trust him? Because he's there with me. If I need help, he's there to protect me and carry me through. So he pastures me in the grass, and I rest because I have enough, and I know he'll provide for me tomorrow. And he leads the way, and I follow him through the water. He restores my soul. We read that as a Western, and you know, I'm depressed. I'm not feeling good. He refurbishes. He re-energizes my soul. But what the Hebrew actually says, he brings me back. This is a description of a sheep who's wandered off, who's gone off by himself, just around the corner, just eating the grass. And now he looks up and he says, "Where's everybody? I'm lost." And he starts bleating. He starts making this cry. And this is a description of a shepherd who goes out and finds that sheep and brings him back. It's the other interesting thing that came out about this is that's not what happens with goats. Have you ever wondered about the sheep and the goats? Why are the goats condemned and the sheep are so well loved? Well, it turns out sheep follow shepherds. Goats don't. Goats just go out and they do whatever they want to do. They're not about following. And so when you think about who does the shepherd want, he wants the sheep. I think this is a goat who decided he'd rather be on top here. But you don't get that. And if I'm a goat, I'm going to wander off without him. I'm not going to worry about it. And he doesn't, you know, I'm not going to start bleating. Restore me, restore me, restore me. Bring me back. So he brings me back after I've wandered away like a goat. I'm still a sheep, but that's what he does for me. And lastly, he leads me in paths of righteousness for his namesake. This is also translated paths, straight paths. And that comes from, if you look at the hillsides, and again, I'm not sure it shows up very well, but you can see these paths here, these straight paths across the hillside. That's where the sheep go. And you see here in this lower picture, and a lot of these, some of these pictures are from Vanderland. Let me give him credit. Some of the readings I've been doing from Kenneth Bailey. But the shepherd leads them along this straight path from one pasture through another pasture, onto another pasture. And he knows where to go. He knows where the food is. He knows where safety is. And so as his sheep, he is the good shepherd. And he sets me on the straight path and leads me along the right way. Jesus talked about being the good shepherd. He said, I am the good shepherd. The sheep know me and they hear my call. He continues on and says, I have other sheep. So in the first case, he's talking about the Jewish people and those among the Jewish group who knew him. He says, I have other sheep. That's talking about us. He's also beginning, and it's, he's providing the shalom for us in that case. And this is how he did it. Isaiah chapter 53. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgression. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us shalom. With his wounds, we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray, and we have turned everyone to his own way. But the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He wants to bring us back. He wants to restore us out of that wilderness, bring us back to the fold. So, for 2018, what will be your resolution? Are you going to be a sheep or a goat? Are you going to reach out to others and show them who the shepherd is? This is a good time right now to make that resolution. Whether it's quietly in your heart because there are things you need to correct, or whether you want to come to him for the first time and say, he is my shepherd. He is going to shepherd me, and I'm going to be a sheep, and I'm going to follow him. Let's do that now as we stand and sing.